Welcome to the ProWrestling.net All Access Daily Podcast for Tuesday, February 28, 2017. I am Jason Powell, and coming up after the short break for non-members, my full review of the final edition of WWE Raw heading into Fastlane. Just a quick note before we get into the review, ProWrestling.net Live returns on Monday, 3 Central, 4 Eastern Time. We will be taking your phone calls coming out of the Fastlane pay-per-view. This is the new plan. When there is a WWE pay-per-view event on a Sunday, that Monday, we will be having ProWrestling.net Live. Looking forward to talking with you. We will be able to take your calls. You can chat in the chat room. You can do all that good stuff as you listen live to the show on Monday at 3 Central, 4 Eastern Time. I'll have plenty of reminders between now and then, but just want to start spreading the word about that. As for WWE Raw, this was the last show before Fastlane, and it felt pretty flat. It had moments. I thought the opening angle and the closing angle were good, kind of a solid bookend edition. Even though Samoa Joe and Cesaro may have looked really good on paper, it wasn't designed to be a particularly memorable match, and I think they made the right decision there. We'll get into some of that. But this was not a strong live crowd. I didn't think WWE gave them a ton to get fired up about. But the Green Bay crowd, I don't know if they're still like having NFL playoff hangover or what this was, but yeah, they just were not a lively bunch. They did cheer Roman Reigns, but yeah, not that, you know, like I say, WWE didn't really give them the best show, but there were definitely times where I just was kind of sitting there going, wow, this should be getting a better reaction than it is. But we'll work our way through it as we do. Green Bay, Wisconsin at Resch Center was the location. Michael Cole, Corey Graves, Byron Saxton on commentary. They actually opened things up with Cole welcoming viewers to the show. And Goldberg's entrance music played. So they went right to Bill Goldberg to start the show. He was introduced by JoJo. He just made his usual entrance, showing him in the backstage area. They did not show him slamming his head into the door like a meathead. So they skipped that part now. He was not bleeding, so that's a good sign. And then we had the broadcast team immediately hyping his Fastlane title match against Kevin Owens. The fans were chanting Goldberg's name, so as much as the Green Bay crowd was kind of a disappointment in some areas, for Goldberg, they were red hot to open the show. Goldberg, once he was in the ring, talked about Kevin Owens' promo the week before, saying he did what he does best, talk. And he said he wasn't going to do that. He said he was in a hell of a good mood, but he's sick because he's 6 days out. He said he'd never made a promise that he didn't keep, and he promised that he would spear, jackhammer, and 1-2-3 with him becoming a Universal Champion and then taking that title to WrestleMania to defend against Brock Lesnar. He promised everyone at home, his wife, his son, and Kevin Owens that he would deliver. I'll see you Sunday. And he was about to leave. Well, he was interrupted by Owens. His music played. He came out onto the stage wearing a black suit, carrying his championship. Fans were booing him. And Owens said he made himself a promise when he came to WWE that he would grab the company by the throat and make them see what he's all about. And Owens spoke about beating John Cena, Dean Ambrose, some of the other top names in the company. And he said that no matter how much fans chant Goldberg's name, Goldberg is the one who's next. Not in the cute catchphrase way. He said, I'm telling you right here, right now, that you, Bill Goldberg, are next in the evolution of Kevin Owens as the Universal Champion. Then Goldberg he golf clapped him a couple of times, you know, kind of taunting him. And, you know, Goldberg could have done a little bit more to sell what Owens said. It's tough, though, because that's, you know, it's not like Goldberg's ever going to show fear or anything like that. But I thought the golf clapping was a bit much. He's not taking him seriously even a little bit. He said it was entertaining, but it also pissed him off. He said, why wait till Sunday? Owens said, I don't speak Neanderthal well. He teased giving Goldberg a Green Bay street fight. Crowd was all fired up for that, of course. And, he says, wait, Green Bay? Green Bay doesn't deserve to see me fight. And he said that they would fight on Sunday, and he would stand over him still, Universal Champion. And then Owens said Goldberg chance will die on Sunday. He dropped the mic and he headed backstage. They played Kevin Owens music to end the segment as Goldberg was standing on the ropes playing to the crowd. And Graves then hyped an in-ring interview with Seth Rollins, and New Day was clowning around backstage, and they went into a commercial break. So a good and interesting opening segment. I thought the most interesting part of this was Goldberg laying it on very thick with the promise to the crowd, to his wife, to his son, that he is going to be champion. That's something you don't see a babyface do if they're not going to win the championship. You know, that's it goes against the grain. And so I think as much as they have over the last 2 weeks, as much as they've been, I guess three with the attack on Jericho, so three shows, the last three shows that they have really done a big job of, a good job of building up Kevin Owens and making him seem just darker, more serious, more focused, more sadistic. It still, I think the message is tune in Sunday to see Goldberg win the championship. So it's like on one hand they're building up Owens, but on the other they're really having Goldberg just tell fans he's going to win the championship. And I've talked about this a lot. I mentioned in my review again, conversation I had once. I don't remember. It may be in the interviews that I've conducted with him. It may have been something we talked about right before an interview or something. But I remember talking with Dutch Mantel, who is now back with TNA Creative. Of course, he played Zeb Colter. And we were talking about Samoa Joe had some certain stipulation that he added, and it just made it painfully obvious that Joe was about to win the TNA Championship. And I remember being down on it, and he, he pointed that out to me. And he said, "Well," he said, "so was Vince Russo. Thing is, by adding that stipulation, yeah, it did give away the finish, but sometimes it's not a bad thing. In that case." It, they had some of their best numbers. And you can make the argument, well, who knows what you would have done had you made it seem like it was a question mark. But he was thoroughly convinced that, by basically telling the crowd, I think it was Joe retires or something if he didn't win the championship. And it was just very obvious he was going to win. And in this case, it's there is something to be said for really making the crowd think it's going to happen and then delivering on that. So, I mean, if you are an Owens fan, I'm guessing you're just kind of clinging to their, he's got Triple H and Samoa Joe with him. I guess I'd just be very surprised if they went back on that big promise that he made, all those promises he made. I think Goldberg does. I mean, I assume going into this, he was going to started to second guess just a little bit, not even second guess, just waver a little bit because of the way they've kind of repositioned Kevin Owens. It'll be interesting to see if there's a storyline reason why they did the Kevin Owens turn, why we didn't get this new and angrier Kevin Owens and the more serious Kevin Owens coming out of this, because you easily could have speared and jackhammered comedy Kevin Owens, and it would have been like, yeah, that's what, of course, that's what's going to happen. But now that he's had this kind of sudden shift, it just seems a little strange they didn't just save this, but I'm guessing there is a storyline reason, perhaps involving Chris Jericho on Sunday. So we'll have to wait and see how all of that plays out. No update on Jericho in this show, by the way. It's he was mentioned, I think, by Kevin Owens in his promo, and that was about it. They're not really playing it up big. Maybe they just don't want too many medical updates. You've got the situation with Seth Rollins going on, but it does seem kind of strange that they're not making a bigger fuss over, what happened to Chris Jericho. New Day made their entrance, and Michael Cole was hyping that they're going to be hosting WrestleMania in 34 nights, and then they were delivering a promo from ringside, Kofi teasing ice cream. They said, and they were getting a really flat reaction. And at this point in the show, I'm just like, wow, New Day's dying. Well, they weren't the only ones. Just like I said, this just wasn't a great crowd. They ended up trying to do an Oscars bid. They said they were going there to face the Shining Stars. And the Stars did interrupt them. They had their music play, and they came out. And then a production member entered the ring and handed Xavier Woods a red card. And he ended up apologizing to Primo and Epico, saying they wouldn't be facing them tonight. They would be facing Big Show instead. And then Rusev and Jinder Mahal came out. And that led to the first match on the show. It wasn't very funny. Just watching this, I don't know if the live crowd wasn't paying attention to the Oscars, and this bit just didn't really do, just they had no idea what was happening, or if they didn't think it was funny. I didn't think it was very comical. I didn't think it was very well done. But yeah, it just didn't go over well at all. But in the opening match, it was New Day, Big E, and Xavier Woods with Kofi Kingston in the corner, beating Jinder Mahal and Rusev with Lana. They did take a commercial break during this. 9 minutes and 45 seconds is what they got out of it. Mahal just looking more jacked by the week. I joked tonight on Twitter that he's going to just be one giant vein at the rate he's going by the time WrestleMania is going to get here. And yes, his entrance music will be "You're So Vain." They just have nothing going, this whole Jinder Mahal and Rusev team. Please send Rusev to SmackDown. Let's rebuild this. This I know the moments of comedy you get at times are very entertaining. But there's nothing happening here on weeks like this. Why waste this guy? Just because he can do comedy doesn't mean he should be. There's money in heel Rusev. We've seen it before, and they can get him back to that. Then we had some hype for the women's tag match later in the show, and they went to a commercial. When they came back, they recapped some highlights of Enzo Amore and Big Cass becoming number one contenders. They had Enzo talking with Cass about winning the tag titles and how he's not going to take the belt off, even when he's in the bathroom and all of this. Cass did kind of bring him back to reality by saying that Gallows and Anderson had won tag titles all over the world, whereas they hadn't even won the tag belts before, anywhere. NXT, anywhere. And then he mentioned something about facing Luke Gallows. They went backstage where Sheamus and Cesaro were talking about not getting the tag title shots. Cesaro had a line about crap smelling. It's kind of strange. Samoa Joe entered the picture and said that it'd been a long time since he'd seen Cesaro. And he said it was the same old thing with him, still trying to figure things out. Sheamus stepped up, looked like he was ready to go at Joe. But Cesaro said that he could always handle Joe. Cesaro said it's the same old Joe who's always backstabbing. And he said that Joe is carrying Triple H's jockstrap. And Joe said that's clever and wished him good luck doing more clever things, adding that it's worked out for him so far. Ouch. But I mean, this is kind of a fun throwback for the Ring of Honor crowd. I wonder how many people that watching this are like, what the hell are they talking about? I really do. I mean, I think there's a lot of people who know, and then, I just don't know how many in the crowd have no idea. I mean, the kids certainly are like, huh? What? Well, I say that, but when I was a kid, God, I was reading magazines and all sorts of stuff. I probably would have known exactly what they're talking about. But it wasn't like the crowd was really oohing and aahing over this whole confrontation between Joe and Cesaro after all these years. They went backstage where Stephanie McMahon was talking with a production member. Mick Foley enters the room, and it was time for Stephanie to emasculate Mick Foley. She said that he's not the Mick Foley that she talked about Mick Foley being the guy who lost his ear and it showed at the lengths that he would go to, but that's not the Mick Foley she has now. She said Triple H ended his career 17 years ago. I think she said today. I'm thinking, wow. 17 years ago, think about all the matches Mick Foley had after that. She said she wasn't apologizing for it. She said Hunter seemed to get stronger every year, while Foley just gets weaker. And she said Foley doesn't measure up to Hunter or even his own expectations. And she said he's getting even more pathetic. And she said that he can't stand up to anyone or anything, even when he can't even stand. Ow. They went to a commercial break from that. I mean, it kind of played into what they were doing in the main event. I don't know. I mean, it wasn't. We've seen worse from Stephanie in some ways, where she's over the top and slapping people and everything. I mean, they're feuding. So it didn't just, hey, let's pick on Foley tonight, even though they'll get along just fine next week. So there's a storyline there. But I don't know. It feels a bit much. It also feels like, grow a set, Mick. Respond. When you're watching it as a viewer, it's just like, maybe she's right, have a spine. Do you really need the job that badly? Tell her to go F herself. They advertised a SmackDown Luke Harper, AJ Styles. I will be at that show in person. You can join Jake Barnett for live coverage, 7 Central, 8 Eastern Time. And then stick around and follow Zach Zimmerman's live coverage of WWE 205 Live. And I'll check in with some notes on that, on those shows once I get home. But Akira Tozawa and Noam Dar was the next match. Dar did have Alicia Fox with him. I wrote this wrong. It's actually a tag match that they're doing at the pay-per-view. I meant to, after once I'm done here, I have to go back in and change that. The match that they've officially announced now, it's Rich Swann and Akira Tozawa facing Brian Kendrick and Noam Dar as a Fastlane kickoff show match. I think I just had it as a singles match, but that is the match. And in this case, it was Akira Tozawa defeating Noam Dar in 3 minutes. Boy, they're just these cruiserweight matches. They just don't give him any time. And for a little bit there, it was like, well, it's kind of a nice break from the Drew Gulak or Tony Nese squash match loss of the week. But, I mean, it's Tozawa and Noam Dar. These are two of the more entertaining guys from the cruiserweight division. And especially Dar has that established personality. He's had some WWE polish with the character, and Tozawa doesn't need it. You know, he gets over wherever he goes, it seems like, to some extent with this crowd so far. Just felt like they could have given these guys more of an opportunity. You know, if you're trying to sell me on a kickoff show match between that involves these two, well, you failed here. I mean, the action was fine while it lasted, and it was Tozawa winning with the snap German suplex, so he wins clean. But nothing fun from Alicia, no MDAR, no mic work, and nothing later in the show to get me excited about seeing, you know, those two. Now, they did follow it up. Austin Aries was on commentary again. Said he was working on a big scoop, which just turned out to be his video package touting his forthcoming debut on the In 205 Live. And then we had Kendrick attacking Tozawa from behind in the ring. And he grabbed a mic and said that was lesson number three. And he said, when the match is over, it's not over. I hope you're learning your lessons. So he's still very much going at him. So he had that little hook. And I guess Dar and Swan, I mean, it's not like they haven't established a feud between those two. I thought they were just going to have two singles matches, but they're combining it into one tag match. So, I mean, I guess Tozawa and Kendrick may have done a little bit to get people thinking about that match on Sunday. I think it'll be a fine match, and I bet they get more time than they did here. I would hope. I mean, 3 minutes, come on. Then Cole hyped the women's tag match. They went to a commercial. When they came back, NXT hype. Authors of Pain against DIY, easy for me to say, Johnny Gargano and Tommaso Ciampa for the NXT tag titles. That match will take place on Wednesday. John Moore is taking over our NXT coverage, and so you can look for that probably late Wednesday evening. There's a chance it'll be Thursday morning, with Zach moving to Tuesdays. John has taken over the Wednesday duties of NXT. Then we had Samoa Joe backstage confronting Mick Foley, and he says, "What's wrong, Mick? Not having a nice day?" And Foley said he has not had a nice day or a nice run at general manager. Talked about being one of Joe's biggest fans and said he sees him now as Triple H's puppet, which Joe denied. Foley asked Joe what he would call it. And Joe said no one tells him what to do. And Foley said he would tell him what to do as long as he is still general manager. So he's sticking up for himself here a little bit. And he booked Joe against Cesaro for later in the show. Like, cool. You know, that's a nice little hook for the diehards. Most of those fans are probably going to be watching the whole show anyway, but you never know. 3 hours is a marathon. Then it was time for the top of the second hour. Charlotte made her entrance along with Dana Brooke, and then we had Charlotte delivering a promo. This all, long story short on this, it basically just led to a women's tag match. And we knew, you know, before it was supposed to be Charlotte and Dana teaming against Sasha and Bayley. Well, Charlotte ended up announcing that no, she had someone else. And Dana didn't seem happy about this, but Dana doesn't seem to matter right now. She doesn't get mic time. She kind of interferes once in a while. It doesn't seem to even go anywhere. Boy, I mean, they went from pushing, you know, you couldn't. Dana was involved in everything Charlotte did, and was getting, it seemed like, abused with the idea that they're going to set her up as a babyface. They just don't seem to be doing anything with her. She just feels like she's, like, oh, yeah, and Dana's there. It's just, there's nothing about her. There's nothing going on with her right now. But she announced, of course, that Nia Jax was going to be her partner. They did, you know, it was comical. They're still trying to, the broadcast team, heel and babyface, make it seem like what Bayley did was the right thing last week by just gladly taking a win that she shouldn't be happy or good about. You know, holding on to her, keeping her championship, even though she's the feel-good character, and it was not a feel-good win because Sasha Banks interfered on her behalf. They did at some point in all of this, at some point in the show, have Sasha say that she's going to be in Bayley's corner. And so are we getting the heel turn there? Is that the idea? Or is her interference going to backfire? So because my whole thing in all this, because I've heard from people who think, oh, she should keep the championship. And I still think most of those people just want to see Bayley have the championship. If you really break it down, it's ridiculous that the pure, innocent Bayley character would be satisfied winning a championship she didn't earn, especially for the first time, you know? There's just no shame in it for her character. That's a Dean Ambrose move, and it works for Dean Ambrose and a lot of other characters. when it's as innocent and pure as Bayley, it doesn't. But I think there's people who just dug their heels in. They want to see Bayley have that championship, and they don't care. The big question I had is why? Why even put her in that position? Why not just have her win clean? It's not like they're protecting Charlotte. They just had Sasha beat Charlotte clean last week on Raw. So why not just have Bayley do that and avoid all of this? Why even have Sasha interfere with the crutch? And I think the only reason they did it is that at some point Sasha's going to take credit for Bayley's championship reign. She's going to, you wouldn't be the champion without me, that sort of a thing. Otherwise, I really don't know what they were going for. But, I mean, they're really, you know, and they wouldn't have to be working so hard to justify what Bayley did, you know, and they are, clearly, by having all the broadcast team, like, even Graves, like, kind of, not like he was, like, complete, yeah, of course, but it was, he did end up ultimately agreeing with Cole and Saxton, and that, of course, you know, it was the right move to keep her championship, that sort of a thing. So that when they go to those lengths, then it just makes me feel like, yeah, they're feeling a little bit of heat about this one, and they, you know, they know that there's some people who strongly disagree with the approach they took here. But anyhow, so yeah, we get the setup, and then we come back from a commercial break, and the match itself was Nia Jax and Charlotte defeating Bayley and Sasha in 11:30. The finish of this, you had Jax fighting Sasha off the ropes, or catching her off the ropes, and then slamming her onto Bayley, and then she followed up with a big leg drop onto Bayley, and got the, or was it, I'm sorry, Sasha, and got the win. So Nia Jax goes over. It's not really about Charlotte, it's a little bit about Bayley, but it's, we find out later that it's going to be Nia and Sasha at the pay-per-view. So, it didn't really feel like this was a big, it didn't really feel like there's any momentum for Bayley. You know, she was part of a, you know, losing effort here in a tag match. And I don't feel excited about Bayley against Charlotte at the pay-per-view. And that's not me trying to dig my heels in. They made the move. I don't agree with it to have Bayley win the title the way she did, but I just can't help it. I'm not excited this time around to see Bayley versus Charlotte. Once the bell rings, I think they're perfectly capable of having a really good match, but I do think they did some damage to the character with some people. Then we had Graves hyping the Rollins segment. We had Foley telling Braun Strowman that he could not give him any competition on this night. And Strowman said he didn't want competition. He wanted a contract for his match against Roman Reigns. Strowman said he wanted to make sure Roman wasn't going to run. And Foley said he didn't think Reigns would run, but if he really wanted a contract signing, they could have one. And he told him don't blame me if it doesn't turn out the way you think it will. And then Strowman said he wanted a contract or else. That's kind of the Strowman thing now, is to close his things with or else. You know, once in a while I like the threat. I don't need it every time he says something and then doesn't follow through on anything. But then we had Graves hyping Big Cass and Luke Gallows for after the break. And they did announce that Kevin Owens will appear on ESPN News on Wednesday. Remember, they like to tell you it's on ESPN, but it's actually on ESPN News. In the fourth match, it was Big Cass pinning Luke Gallows in 2:40. Speaking of champions who have no momentum, Gallows and Anderson get their asses handed to them by Roman Reigns 2 weeks in a row. Sure, I don't think that they ended up actually losing one of those matches by pinfall, but they were manhandled by Roman Reigns in a handicap match, and they're the tag team champions. And Big Cass beating them going into the pay-per-view makes beating one of them in a singles match makes some sense. So it wasn't that, but it's just they have no momentum. I was excited, like, all right, finally, you know, you put the tag titles on them. Maybe they're finally going to figure this out, a way to position Gallows and Anderson, be more serious, make them more ass-kickers. Nope. They just, they get roughed up by Roman Reigns. There's really nothing happening with them. It's just Cass goes over, and he does so clean. Big boot, gets the win. So the challengers have some momentum going into the pay-per-view. Then we had the broadcast team promoting Fastlane. They did say that, wait until Thursday to sign up for the network, because if you do, then you'll get WrestleMania free as part of your 30-day trial. Wow, they really like those 30-day trials for new subscribers. The second hour we go to here. No, not quite yet. Footage aired from WWE's Facebook page of Titus O'Neil trying to get Sheamus to team with him. They wanted to be the Irish Connection because his last name's O'Neil. I think one of the broadcasts, I think it was it Cole? Somebody was like kind of trying to play into the joke, and I don't remember exactly what was said, but I came away feeling like Cole didn't get it. Not that it was funny, but you'd think he would have understood it. Sheamus tried to walk away, but Titus took offense and spun him around, and then Sheamus shoved him over a catering table. And the lesson I took from this is one that Titus should already know. Never grab a cranky Irishman who's walking away from you. Do I have to explain? Because I'm not gonna. Fifth match, we had Sheamus pinning Titus O'Neil in 19 seconds. Titus got to rough up Sheamus before the match. One of the broadcasts he met with Saxton said he's never seen him so aggressive. And then moments later, Sheamus connected with the brogue kick and pinned him clean. One little thing is that I think this run with Cesaro has worked for Sheamus. It's brought him out of that funk that he was in, where it's just like, get him off my television. You could look up and down the roster and you couldn't really find a match you wanted to see Sheamus in. It's just he'd been that guy that he's been spinning his wheels for too long. He was kind of a really flat character. There was nothing happening. And now some of it is, you do introduce some new talent along the way, but I do look forward to seeing like Sheamus and Joe, for instance. I think they've managed to, with this tag team, I think breathe some new life into the Sheamus character. I don't know if you break up the team and you just have Sheamus go do his own thing, how long it's going to last, but I do kind of feel like he means more than he did there for a while. They end up hyping Joe and Cesaro. And how they traveled similar roads and shared a battle or two over the course of their careers, but this is the first time they'll ever meet on Raw. And then Graves said that Rollins would be watching that match like a hawk. And he said that a sit-down interview with him was up next. Graves stood in the ring, set up I think it was the same long video package they've been showing that focuses on Triple H just talking all sorts of smack about Seth Rollins and how he made him what he is and all of that. And it did include the footage with Samoa Joe attacking Rollins, which led to the legit knee injury. Graves introduced Seth. He came out hobbling on one knee. He had the knee brace on, or hobbling on one leg. He had the knee brace on, and he was using a crutch and moving very slowly. And he let out a big sigh once he got in the ring, like he was relieved he was there. So he was doing a good job of, I assume, selling all of this. And Rollins said that the MCL tear was more significant than the initial diagnosis. And he said his rehab is intense, and it is what it is. And Graves asked, where's heads at? And he said, that's tricky. And he kind of paused, and he said, it sucks. He said he felt the same snap in his knee, and he laid in the hospital bed wondering if maybe he deserved it. Graves asked what he meant, and he said that he held the title over his head 2 years ago at WrestleMania. Now he's missed the last couple, and so he's been asking himself if what he sacrificed for that was all worth it. And Rollins recalled telling the fans he didn't sell out, he bought in, and he said he should have known better when it came to Triple H stabbing him in the back. Then he brought up the whole redesign, rebuild, and reclaim catchphrase and said it was supposed to be about him being better, and somewhere along the way he lost sight of that. No, Vince McMahon did when he brought you back as a heel because he thought Roman Reigns needed a dance partner, and God forbid he turned Roman Reigns. So Vince McMahon is the one who screwed you upset. But anyway, Graves said that according to Hunter and Joe, Rollins is going to miss Mania. And he asked what Rollins has to say about that. And he stammered a bit while saying it's not looking great. And he said it doesn't look like the doctors are going to clear him in time. Well, that was Triple H's cue. And at this point, I was thinking, wow, Triple H is going to show ass here. You're going to have Triple H, the genius, the game, the smartest guy in all of the WWE world is going to be played because he's going to come out and, thinking he's going to take advantage of Seth, and Seth is the one conning him, and Seth's about to work him over. Nope, that wasn't it. Instead, it was Triple H cutting another promo on him and talking about fans think he's heartless, but it was really good to see Rollins. And he said, oh, and you know Joe, right? And Joe was already positioned behind Seth. So you had Hunter on one side in the ring apron. And at that point, I think Joe was still on the floor, but he eventually stood on the apron too, just on the opposite side of Hunter. So basically, Seth's surrounded. He's got one in front of him, one behind him. Nice touch. And he just played up the idea that I made you. And he said Rollins showed it in everyone, shoved it in everyone's face and told him that he was the man. And then he talked about basically everything he did and for him. And then he said Rollins bit the hand that feeds, and he mocked the fans for saying he used up Rollins and spit and ended up spitting him out. So freaking what, he said. He said, yeah, I did. Get over it. I like that. That was heelish. This was much more heelish than the Triple H promo that they keep replaying, where it just sounds like he's making all these fair criticisms of Seth Rollins and not doing anything to get heat. And he said that Rollins profited along the way. He said, I used to tell the whole world that you were the future, but now you're the past. You're just another washed-up, has-been, beat-up superstar. Hunter told him to salvage what was left. And he told him not to come to WrestleMania and don't call him out because he's done playing with Rollins and warning him. And he swore that if Rollins were to show up and call him out, it would be the last thing he would do in a WWE ring. I like this. This was good. Rollins called Triple H back before he could leave, though, and recalled saying he had nothing to lose, and he's proceeding at this point. He said, I will be at WrestleMania, and if it's the last thing I ever do, then I swear to you, it will be the last thing you ever do. And then he dropped the mic and had an intense stare down with Hunter. Triple H dropped the mic and then dropped to the floor. And then Joe joined Hunter at ringside. And they ended up heading up the ramp while Cole said that Rollins has to be medically cleared or he won't be at WrestleMania. And I like this, you know, even though I did think, wow, Hunter's going to show some ass here. The fact that they didn't, I like that. I mean, is it possible that they don't know? Yeah, but I mean, I think all signs behind the scenes point to, I don't think they would have done this, for instance. I really don't. I don't think they'd be playing it this close to Mania if they didn't know. I think we will be seeing Seth Rollins get in the ring at WrestleMania and face Triple H, and I think they're just kind of stretching this out now and making fans wonder. And it may, depending on when they want to make the announcement that this is official, I mean, this is something you can stretch out until go-home week. You know, play up, is he going to be able to be there? Here's your update this week. And then you finally get to go-home week, and Rollins announces yes. Or if you want to leave people hanging, I mean, you could wait until the pay-per-view. I would say definitely on the go-home show, though. That's how I would do it. So we'll see what they do. But I really like this. I like the intensity. This was certainly one of the highlights of the night. Then they had Saxon hype the contract signing for later in the show. I will say, Seth, in the interview, I didn't feel it came off well. I didn't. It felt forced. You're trying to convince me this is a legit knee injury, but then he's back kind of playing into character. I don't know. There's ways to kind of get around some of the things that he talked about with him. It's basically there was a little bit of a disconnect for me as far as like the suspension of disbelief when he started talking about, was it worth it? You know, what he did at WrestleMania to become champion, was it worth it? You know, basically selling his soul to Triple H, just the idea. Because again, it's, you know, it's just, if you want to just make it easier, kind of skip that and play this. So we know what's been, we know the issues between the two. I don't know that we need a full recap every time these guys get together. And so you can kind of dance around that and to make, you know, Rollins make it clear he wants Hunter in the ring. And it just kind of avoid some of that. I think there was a way they could have done it. But the intensity is what sold me on this and what left me enjoying this. Next match was Big Show against Primo and Epico. I think you know how this went. He beat them in 155 in a handicap match. I think it was Byron. I'm almost positive. Show picked up, we'll say Primo. I don't remember if it was Primo or Epico. Picked up Primo, and he said one choke slam. I think he thought for sure Show was going to choke slam the other, but he didn't. And in fairness to Byron, I thought the same thing. Yeah, Big Show ended up getting the win that in dominant fashion. A little bit disappointing. I mean, I was hoping they were going to have something for Show. He had that strong showing with Braun Strowman, which wasn't a major topic of conversation this week, which is too bad. You know, I thought even though Show lost that match, fans were looking at him a little bit differently. And when you put him out there and have him squash Primo and Epico and you don't give him any mic time, then he just kind of felt like he's back to normal. It was, you know, he wasn't the complete jolly giant where he's, you know, just all smiles and nothing seems to matter and what he's doing feels like more of an exhibition. It wasn't that, so there was some improvement over the Big Show we've seen that we saw prior to his match with Strowman, at least. But I was hoping there'd be like this definite, you know, just this declarative mission statement from Big Show talking, you know, what are his goals? That's the thing that's kind of been missing from this character for a while now as a babyface. Is he just happy to be there and fight whoever they put in front of him? He has no real aspirations. That's kind of a letdown. And what does Big Show want? And I don't know that they figured it out. Maybe the match came off better than they anticipated. And whatever, with WrestleMania season being here, the timing could just be unfortunate that whatever they have planned for him isn't all that special, and so they don't really want to take a lot of time spotlighting him. We've certainly been hearing all the Shaq talk and all that, but they've made that public. But who knows what the hell's going to happen with that? The latest Black History Month video focused on Dr. Martin Luther King. Then we went to Neville talking with Tony Nese backstage about their tag match against TJ Perkins and Jack Gallagher. Neville started talking about the purpose being to put Jack Gallagher in his place before Fastlane. Nese was losing interest in what Neville was saying, because he was busy adjusting, I think it was the was it wristbands? Something, he had something on his wrist, I think, elbow or wrist. But he was, and then Neville picked up on that and asked him if he was paying attention, if he understood, and he said that he would do what's best for the premier athlete. I'm like, oh, well, that's nice. He's gonna do what's best for Neville. Oh wait, he thinks he's the premier athlete. They went to a commercial break. We got a shot inside the Green Bay Packer Hall of Fame. I'm a Viking fan. But still, I'd like to see that. I've been to Lambeau a couple, few times now, and wonderful. If you ever get a chance to go, go. That's a Viking fan telling you, folks. We had Michael Cole recall Austin Aries talking about the big scoop from earlier. And Cole said Aries believes he will be in the WWE Hall of Fame one day. And then they replayed that teaser video from 205 Live. They could have made a bigger deal out of this, but Aries was good here. Yeah, as ring entrances were taking place, he asked Cole, "What'd you think of my package? It was massive, wasn't it?" So typical Austin Aries. Got a chuckle out of me. Got a chuckle out of Michael Cole. You could tell. Yeah, it's dick jokes, and sometimes when you hear the wrong person say it, it's like a complete groan-inducing coming from Austin Aries in this setting. Completely worked. So it may not be fair that dick jokes don't work for everyone, but such is life. Seventh match, it was Jack Gallagher and TJ Perkins beating Neville and Tony Nese in 2 minutes. 2 minutes. This one, more so than the last one, was like, why am I supposed to be excited about the pay-per-view? They did have Gallagher catch Nese in a submission hold, and Neville T's running in to save him, to break it up. But Gallagher was staring at him, and so he just let Nese tap out. And that was that. Yeah, I'm looking forward to Gallagher and Neville's title match, but not because of what they did here. If anything, it kind of lowered my expectations, or enthusiasm, I should say. Expectations, I mean, match-wise, I think are the same. I think they'll give them a decent amount of time. They just seem to be afraid of keeping the cruiserweights out there on Raw. I'm guessing the minute-by-minute numbers are not telling a good story. But at the same time, then it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy, where if you're not going to dedicate any real time to these guys, then, well, how do you expect them to get over through however many people are watching 205 Live, which I don't think is a significant number? It's tough. I mean, I have like some of the more, I do applaud when they kind of, all right, we don't want to have them out there having matches for, prolonged stretches, but let's do something a little more character driven. And that kind of thing has worked for me. Boy, it's a shame that they couldn't have dedicated a good chunk of Raw. I know they're trying to establish 205 Live, but had people been able to watch that five-way elimination match on Raw, I think that would have won some people over. That was a lot of fun. If you haven't seen that edition of 205 Live, it's definitely worth going back. It basically, one of the issues with 205 Live is there's so little at stake. If someone's feuding with Neville, they get the shot. Everyone else just kind of is having a match to have a match. There's not enough going on. Once in a while they'll come up with something, but like that one where it was just to determine the number one contender, something was at stake. The action was really good. That's when 205 Live and the cruiserweight division works. It's not just the days of just throwing six-man lucha libre tag match. And expecting people to be happy because these guys are doing moves the heavyweights don't do, that those are over. I'm sorry. It takes more than that, and WWE just hasn't quite figured it out yet with the cruiserweights. They've made some progress, but feels like lately it's a bit of a step back. And it wasn't that long ago I was saying, when they had a brief run or a couple of brief matches, with the personalities involved, it left me wanting more. Things have already changed. I'm not left wanting more. I'm just kind of left feeling like, yeah, you don't care about these guys. Why should I when I watch the show? Video package for Beth Phoenix's WWE Hall of Fame induction, and then we ended up with the broadcast team hyping the in-ring main event of the show. Then we went to Bailey icing her neck. Sasha's rubbing her own neck. And Sasha said, no one deserves the title more than Bailey does. And Bailey talked about Charlotte always being up to something. And that's when Sasha said, don't worry, I'll be in your corner. Well, Stephanie overheard this and questioned whether Sasha was going to be in her corner because she doesn't think Bailey can get the job done on her own. Sasha did not step up, you know, pipe in and say, no, stupid, it's because Charlotte either has Dana Brooke interfere, you know, she could even have Nia Jax interfere, so I'm going to be there, you freaking moron. No, she just sat there and took it. And Stephanie ended up booking Sasha against Nia Jax for Sunday. I look forward to that. It doesn't feel like it did the first time where it was like, hey, Nia's doing something different. It's just the build for it was, non-existent. You know, they're just kind of going back to it. Not really playing up what Nia did to Sasha's knee. And there was a different way to go about this. And it's just kind of unfortunate that it was kind of thrown on the show at the last moment. Eighth match, it was Samoa Joe beating Cesaro in 7:50. They did a spot where Joe just basically he was lowering him onto the ring apron from inside the ring, you know, and Cesaro landed feet, you know, on his feet, and then he immediately clutched his knee. So he's selling his knee, and it was all done so that he had an excuse the rest of the match. He would try to go for the swing at one point, I think, the sharpshooter, different moves, and you know, trying to perform a springboard off the ropes, things like that, and the knee would give out. So the idea was that he put up a good fight, but you got a good explanation for why Joe was able to manhandle Cesaro. They went further in protecting Cesaro than I probably even would have, because I don't think there's any shame in losing two badass Samoa Joe right now, but they did a good job with it. And so I'm sure there were people disappointed going, my God, Joe and Cesaro, when they give us under 8 minutes. Well, it's at that point in Joe's WWE run early where he shouldn't be going out there and having 20-minute back and forth, you know, near fall after near fall style matches. I'm sorry, we're just not there yet. It's one of the reasons that I keep saying that, you know, I kind of reserve the right to change my tune as we get closer to Mania. Even though Finn Balor and Samoa Joe could be a really good match, I don't know that I want to see that, because I don't know that Joe should be having that really highly competitive match with anyone. There's part of me that thinks it would be better for Joe's character development in WWE to actually be in Triple H's corner. I know it's not exciting, and I want to see Joe wrestle at WrestleMania too, but I mean, I'd rather see him squash somebody. Or dare I say win the Dre, you know, but then to go in there and have like a 15-20 minute WrestleMania type back and forth match with someone. But you know, again, reserve the right to change my tune as we get closer to Mania, but that really is how I feel right now. But yeah, I like this. I felt like they did a good job. This isn't something you're going to be telling your grandchildren about. This may not even be something you're going to be telling the guys at work about tomorrow. But it made sense. You know, it was logical. They did choose to protect Cesaro. And so if you're a Cesaro fan, I think that has to be encouraging. But the right guy went over. And Joe, once again, using the Uranage, which I don't even know if they're calling it that. It seems like they just have... they kind of seem to be dancing around the name right now. So maybe they're trying to come up with a name for his finisher. For whatever reason, not using the Muscle Buster. He's used it since, obviously. If you're somebody who doesn't watch NXT, he used it on a regular basis in NXT, despite what happened with Tyson Kidd. So it's not, you know, I can't imagine it has anything to do with that. I'm not quite sure why they've switched to this one. But Joe just continuing to be a real bright spot on Raw. I'm enjoying the hell out of Samoa Joe on Raw so far. After the match, Charlie Caruso interviewed him on the stage about making a big impact on Raw. Really good promo. He said, I came here to hurt people. And he said that Cesaro is a world-renowned wrestler, a seasoned veteran, and a freak athlete, but he's not me. And then he said Cesaro is a reminder to everyone in the back that it doesn't matter who you are or what you've accomplished or that people like you. Sami Zayn's music played, and this was very similar to the way Joe blindsided Sami. Joe's looking at one entrance, and somehow Sami comes up behind him. That's what Joe did to Sami. Very, very cool to see that kind of little follow-up. So he blindsides him, and he's getting the better of Joe. And then the referees get involved, and you have your pull apart. Well, Joe ends up getting a cheap shot in on Sami. Referees get between them again. Sami teases calming down. They're on the stage at this point. Then he performs a flip from the stage onto Joe, and thank God it's not that long drop, because Sammy hit a lot of concrete there. I didn't get to see it twice, but it looked like you could kind of feel the thud the first time he did. I don't know that Joe got as much of him as he wanted to brace that fall, but I mean, he popped right up. He's fine. But then he had some referees and some independent wrestlers step in. I was told that Darren, not to be confused with Baron Corbin, was one of the guys that was playing security. And let's see here. I've got it in my notes. Who was the other guy? A guy I'm not familiar with. I've seen Darren Corbin quite a bit on the local independent scene. Downtown Petey Brown. I have not seen Downtown Petey Brown. And I believe, and someone thought that now I don't know if they were in this or the main event because there was security in both places. Somebody thought the guy who was speared, not the main event, but the contract signing. Because I am like, who was speared? And someone guessed that it was Danny Duggan. The guy looked pretty thick for what I've seen. With the last time I saw Danny Duggan, now somebody did say he's been putting on some size lately. So it could have been. I didn't get a good look at it. I just kind of forgot that, oh, it's probably guys that I would have seen because they're in the Midwest right now. So if anybody, any Midwest listeners noticed, let me know. I didn't get a chance to go back and watch that one. I checked that. I saw the spot twice, but didn't really get a good look at the security guard who took that move through the barricade when Reigns and Strowman were doing their thing. But anyway, back to the brawl. He ended up with Zayn. So he performs the flip, and then the referees and the indie. Oh, it was just as simple as that. The security guys stepped in again. So yeah, that was the end of the segment, and it was a good one. And it is official. Zayn and Joe. Again, don't get your hopes up for 20 minutes of them tearing it up at Fastlane. If you are a fan of Samoa Joe, I don't think that's what you're hoping for. And even if you're a fan of Sami Zayn, recognize what the purpose is. Doesn't mean they can't have a good match, but I don't think we need it to be, wow, Sami Zayn really hung in there with Joe for this, five-star back and forth classic. I just don't think that's what you do with Joe. The time is going to come, and it's going to make more sense. But yeah, I really am loving what they're doing with Samoa Joe. So many times you see guys called up, and it gets frustrating. They don't use them the way you want them to. They're just nailing it with Joe so far. And so enjoy while it lasts, if nothing else. Then we had more hype for the WWE Network and the upcoming pay-per-view events. Then we went to Graves announcing Joe and Zayn as being official for Fastlane. Saxton hyped Nia Jax and Sasha Banks as well. And then Mick Foley stood in the ring for the contract signing. Braun's music interrupted him. He came out and told Foley, you got the table, you got the contract, you got the pen, leave. And Foley said that he may not be the long for the general manager position, but Strowman will respect him as long as he holds it. He said that he would have, Strowman told him that he would have respected him once as an opponent, but Stephanie's right, he's a shell of his former self. Foley fired up and said that he'd had enough of being talked down to. And I laugh because Mick Foley does a lot of yelling in odd places these days. This was not one of them. This was good. He fired up at the right time. He's like, you've been waiting most of the night. Like, come on, Foley. Geez, are you really going to sit here and take all this again? He said Strowman would respect him as a legend or else. And then Roman Reigns' entrance music played. So, yeah, Mick Foley stood his ground. It may be Braun Strowman. Like, when Foley goes to have hip surgery, whenever that is, it may be Braun Strowman who sends him on his way. I don't think Mick's going to be, he can't take a bump, but they can certainly show, like, oh, carnage, and my God, what happened to Mick Foley? And it could be blamed on Braun Strowman. There are different ways they can do that, curious to see how it's done, when it's done. For Mick's sake, I hope he can make it until WrestleMania, and I hope it's a temporary write-off for him. He's done a nice job as the general manager, I think, by and large. And that's coming from somebody who really thought Kurt Angle would be better in the role than Mick was. And maybe he would have been, but I've enjoyed Mick. It just kind of was a second time around thing. Like, here we go again. We've been here and done this with Mick Foley, but I have enjoyed Mick in this role. Then we had Strowman meeting Braun at, or I'm sorry, Roman at ringside. They fight, and then it's just a big brawl. And Strowman ends up catching Reigns and running him into the ring post and tossed him over the barricade and followed him. Strowman slammed Roman's head into production cases a couple of times, so they're brawling out in that area. And then Reigns ended up blocking a shot from Strowman, punching him. him and slamming his head into a railing, and Roman speared Strowman through a barricade. Easy for me to say again, my lord. Which took out a big security guard in the process, and then Reigns ended up entering the ring, and the fans chanted Roman as he picked up the contract. Yes, they were cheering for Roman Reigns. I'm not kidding. Reigns was about to sign the contract when he noticed that Strowman was back on his feet, and Strowman asked if that's all Roman had. And Reigns hit him with another Superman punch, and Strowman ran Reigns into the ring post, and the top turnbuckle came off. The turnbuckle. He ran him into the corner, and when he hit, then the turnbuckle came off. And then Cole said it exploded from the force of Strowman, and Braun played to the crowd a little bit in a heelish way, and then was booed as he left the ring. And then they replayed the turnbuckle spot a couple of times, and Reigns managed to get to his knees and still sign the contract as Strowman was watching from the stage. And then Braun headed to the back, and they had Roman's music played as the broadcast team delivered final hype for Fastlane and this match. Well done. I did enjoy this as well. So even though a lot of the show, just there were things that felt flat, some of it with the live crowd feeling flat, it had moments. You know, I think Seth Rollins, Triple H, Joe, you know, mostly Rollins and Hunter, that segment, Joe just kind of stood there. But I thought that was well done. I like what they did with Joe and Cesaro. I like what they did here in the final segment. I like the opening segment with Goldberg and Owens as well. I really like that they went all the way with this. This wasn't, all right, Strowman got the better of Roman a couple of weeks in a row. Let's have Roman look strong now going into the pay-per-view. They kind of broke away from their formula. They really made Braun look like a badass each and every time he and Roman got together. There wasn't that feel-good moment for Roman. The closest it was him getting to his knees and signing the contract. And that's what I, if you go back and listen a few weeks ago, I was saying, I hope we see that. I hope it is Braun standing tall throughout the build to this, no matter what they're going to do at the pay-per-view. If they're going to put Roman over, I may not like it, but at least the build, I think Braun needs to look strong going in, and that's exactly what they've done. I think it's been effective. It stands out that it's not just, oh, typical WWE formula. The heel gets the better of the babyface 1 or 2 weeks, but that babyface is going to get his revenge. And like I say, maybe Roman does at the pay-per-view, but so, you know, so be it. But at least during the build, it was unique, and Braun was the guy who stood out as the bigger badass of the two, and it's a match that I'm looking forward to. The build has been good, but I also want to see how good of a match these two can have. We just saw Braun have a really nice big man match with Big Show. We've seen Roman have a lot of matches with some really good workers, and I think he is overly criticized as far as by some for his work. I think he has... You know, held his own in some very memorable, good quality matches, but it's a little different when he's in there with a guy like Braun Strowman. How are they going to work together? I think it's a challenge for both of them, and so I'm really looking forward to seeing how they fare. I mean, if you told me a year ago Braun against Roman singles match, I would have cringed, but here we are, and it's one of the matches I'm looking forward to. I think Fastlane is going to be fun, and I look forward to covering that live on Sunday night, beginning with the needlessly long one-hour kickoff show, 6 Central, 7 Eastern Time. And then coming up after the show, Jake Barnett and I will get together as we do following WWE pay-per-view events for our full-length audio review of the show. So, and by the way, if you like these full-length audio shows that we do, I know you guys on the all-access side, you hear kind of our, you know, week in, week out, you hear some of the briefer things that we do. For Raw, I do this Monday nights, almost every night, almost every Monday night for .NET members. Once in a blue moon, there'll be something on Tuesday. And then you guys tend to hear it here as well, those rare weeks when I cover the do the audio review on Tuesday. But usually it is late Monday night, early Tuesday morning. And by early Tuesday, I mean like after midnight Central Time, when the members have access to this show. Members are also listening to the 67-minute, I believe, Q&A audio show that I did earlier today, answering their pro wrestling questions with some fun non-wrestling stuff at the end of the show as well. So just a ton of audio content available to members. I'm just giving you the basics of it. If you want to hear that member exclusive audio review of the WWE Fastlane show, you want to hear all of our audio content that we've ever recorded in over 9 years now of pro wrestling.net, it's all there available in the archives. We would love to have you on board. in time for WrestleMania. If you were interested in membership, visit the main page. Get into that sign-up area once you do. Three different pricing options. $750 gets you in the door for 1 month. If you want to save yourself some money, there is a six-month option that brings the price down. And, of course, that annual option brings the price down to an average of $550 per month. You're saving $2 per month if you take that annual option. So, again, WrestleMania time. Treat yourself. Do what WWE Network did. I don't care if you wait till Thursday or whatever and sign up for a month and get Mania. Whatever works for you, but we would love to have you on board. And one more reminder, ProWrestling.net Live returns on Monday. You'll hear from me before then, but ProWrestling.net Live on Monday. 3 Central, 4 Eastern, your phone calls. Can't wait. Really looking forward to it. So until next time, everybody, thank you so much for listening. Take care.